And it's probably not stuff you're hearing in church, right? You know what I mean? So in all that, what do you listen to? How do you filter through all this? So we spent basically three sessions going through all that. Tonight we're graduating to the capstone, which is not what are you listening to anymore. It's who or what are you living for? Now, I'm not going to embarrass anyone to ask if you looked at the questions on page 34. I would like to ask if any of you would be willing. I'm just going to pick out three questions. What is the purpose of your life? Now, I asked you to spend half an hour on the whole page. So a question that huge, that deserves about 5 minutes anyway for you to consider what the purpose of your life is. What do you think? Does your life have any meaning at all? Do you just get up in the morning and kind of plod through the day? A lot of people do. Anyone want to respond to that? You know me, you're getting to know me. This is interactive, right? So I'm not going to pick on anyone that wouldn't be right for me just to arbitrarily point, which means I'm tempted to. But I want, yeah.
Is there God? Is there all others?
Okay. How do you flesh it out? Because you're probably not the only one. Would anyone else have said that, serve God? Probably a few of you, I hope. Would you be good? How do you flesh it out so that when you get up tomorrow morning, what does that mean for you? You see where we're going with that? It's too big. Yeah.
Right now I'm in a state of life of preparing to serve God, so being in the Word and just trying to learn as much as possible. So that's sort of my short term goal is to get the knowledge that I need.
Yeah. Excellent. It is a day by day thing. And that's why we're told to take up our cross. Remember, daily, right? So the idea is that God has a plan and purpose for your life, not only some big thing down the road, but some of you are about 12 to 13 years old here, right? A few of you? Right? How old are you?
13.
See? Okay. And where I'm going with that is it's going to be different, and Joanna, right? How old are you?
12.
12? Okay. So it's going to be different than 18, 19, 20 year old, but it's going to be the same idea. And that is, if you get nothing else out from camp, I hate to think that you don't get anything else. But if you only get one thing, look at this here, which kind of is a summary of the first question that we always talk about in the catechism. And that is that you and I exist for God. He isn't there just to exist for us. That would be idolatry. That it's all about me. You've probably heard that saying, right? Have you ever heard that? It's all about me? Okay. I feel like I'm losing some of you already. I don't know why I do that so quickly. It's a gift, I guess. But the worldview is so much different from ours. It isn't all about me. Chris, you probably agree with that. You say, no, it's all about me. That's how most people think. That you see it on the freeway, right? People cut in front of other people. They want to get around. You're in my way, this sort of a thing. You see it at the shopping malls. What is God doing in your life today is the second question I want to pull you out on. Someone else, anyone want to volunteer? What's God doing in your life? Do you know? Maybe you don't know how to know. Maybe you wish I'd stop asking questions. These are hard. It's not a yes or no. It's not yes, Jesus and God. Yeah.
He's working on teaching me to be more of a servant. Like, what I'm trying to do is like serve God by serving others, mm-hmm. and trying to focus less and less on self.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. James 1:1. Now we said James was the half-brother of? James, the bond servant of God and Jesus Christ. You know what a bond servant is? A slave. Have you ever indentured yourself to someone? Probably not. Hope not. It's like you sold yourself as a slave to a person. Where whatever they want you to do, I'm your servant. May that happen for me. I'm all about that. That's pretty huge. So here's a brother of Christ. He doesn't, you know, I'm such a good guy here. And I'm an apostle, you know. And he doesn't do that. I'm a slave of God and Jesus Christ. And by the way, that verse does show that Jesus Christ is God. But the point we're making here is if he felt that way, how much more for you and for me? That's how he starts his book, as he writes to you. this book is to you. Remember, we talked about that this morning. It's a Catholic book, meaning it's not just to Timothy. And even though those books are for us, the idea of a Catholic epistle is it's written to the church. It's for us. Excellent. Thank you for that. Katrina, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? 2 days, I'm getting some names. What impact does your life make in the lives of others? And then we'll start the lesson, because I know there's a fire going out there in Schmoyz and all that stuff. What impact is your life making in the life of others? You know what happens when I ask these questions? Everyone starts looking down at their paper like, oh man, and I get that. So you don't have to put your hand up. I'm not here about embarrassing you, but I'm challenging you. These are things that you've got to struggle with, because these make a difference for you. How are you going to flesh out what you've gotten from here? That's really where it's at. And it is getting up tomorrow morning. It's going back home to whatever you go to. Hopefully a lot of you have great families. I work in a school where I get people in every day that have had poor families. They're running away from home, and they can do that now because they're 18 and they want to get away as far as they can. And I hear awful stories. So maybe some of you are going to a home like that. I hope not. But the point is, you can make a difference in that home, or you can make a difference if you're homeschooled in a great Christian home, whatever your home is, or your church, or your neighborhood. What's it going to be? What impact do you make? Think about it. Anyone want to volunteer? Were you raising your hand, Gunning, or you're pointing to someone?
No, I'm sorry.
I pick on people when I see any movement, so people are learning very quick. They kind of hold their hands together. All right.
Matthew wants to say something.
Who does? Matthew does, because he's pointing to Dr. Blizzard there. Is that why? Turn to page 35 in your hands. Did you want to say something? Well, when I saw him, he was sort of doing this. I thought, all right, you got my attention. Please, thank you. I didn't know if they were picking that. Not that they would ever do that. Please.
Well, I hope that I impact others in a good way, but the only time I've seen it is at work with at least two different guys. One, he is interested in Christianity, but he's not a Christian, so we can talk about that. And the other one, he told me that he likes me because I tell the truth a lot.
They notice you're impacting. May the Lord bless you when you go to boot camp and as you serve in the Marines. And sometimes it's just one-on-one, the fellow Marine next to you, whoever else. May the Lord bless you as you go and continue to use you as an impact. Turn to page 35. You want to do a collective hoorah again?
No,
turn to page 35 in your handout, if you would. I'm going to make this easy for you. Each time I try to do it a little bit differently, I like to shake things up a little bit. That way you don't get in the rut and groove, and then that way we can make life a little bit easier. You've earned it. So most of the verses are right here for you. And I'll even give you the answers. Don't live, first of all, we're going to talk about don't live for pleasure. Is there anything wrong with pleasure? A lot of you are shaking your heads no, and that's absolutely right. Pleasure is good. God, I like the, what were they, mandarin oranges tonight, right? They were awesome. The food's been awesome. You know I love nature, I told you about that. And if we had more time, I'd ask y'all, what's good for you? Enjoy life. That's the whole idea. May I be so bold to even say when you get married, enjoy sexuality. We've talked about some of the boundaries, but in marriage, Hebrews 13, right? It's a gift from God. There's so much to enjoy in life that God's given. If you do it in the right way, following the Lord, everything goes in place for you. You're blessed. Who would like to read from right here? Read James 4:1-4. One volunteer. Thank you.
What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want. So you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on wrong motives.
So this kind of a person What is their God? What are they living for? Say again?
Self.
Yeah, pleasure and self. How's that working for them? Fights, quarrels. Does that sound like the world you see around you? Turn on the TV, the news lately? If you live for pleasure, you're going to be very disappointed. The second one is profit. Don't live for pleasure or profit. Someone else read James 4, 13 to 14, would you please? Thank you.
Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city. Spend a year there. Carry on business and make money. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes.
So you have a mist. You've been out in the morning. Maybe you've seen your breath. Then it kind of disappears and dissipates. But hopefully you'll live a very long time. Hopefully you'll live 80, 90 years old, whatever it is. But the point of this is don't live just for profit. You're living to make money? Be careful. Think about it. Now Solomon says life is good. Enjoy life. We're told that in the Bible. Paul says that too, right? God's given us all things richly to enjoy. So I'm not going to be a Debbie Downer here and say, you know, well, don't live for pleasure. What I'm saying is enjoy life. But the way you enjoy it is by loving and serving God, that we live for Him. He's the one that made all this stuff. So what are you living for? Think about it. When you think about money, Jesus said, what does it profit you if you gain the whole world and lose your own soul? At our nuclear power school, get this, they get a $15,000 bonus. Now, they don't get it all at once, and Navy's not stupid. But when they sign up, that's part of what they get. And what they do is they hold it as a carrot, if you will, at the end, so they get it in increments. But that's a lot of money for one sailor to go through, and then they pour into them a lot of money in the schooling. But my point of this is, I told you already, we have a high rate of suicidal ideation. Does it sound like they're very happy? Does it sound like money's buying them happiness? Now, I'm not putting the school where I work at down, but what I am saying is some people have come in for the wrong reason. The recruiter will dangle that in front of them, and it sounds pretty good, especially if you're from a poor family and all the other things that come with this. But if they come in for that reason, it doesn't work. They're not happy. And I have students telling me halfway through the class curriculum, they come in the office and say, Chapman, how do we get out of here? I'll give any money I got back. Live for God. He never disappoints. And believe me, I've lived long enough to see this. And so I hope you trust me on that. Okay, number two, instead live to, what do you think that would be?
Please God,
glorify God. Excellent. All right. Someone read a couple verses there on this side. Who wants to volunteer this time? Any of you? Would you? Thanks. The James 4. It really isn't, as you can tell, it's not 5 to 10, but those verses there. Thanks.
The Spirit He caused to dwell in us longs jealously. Submit yourselves, then, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come near to God, and He will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded.
Excellent. Now, I've taken a slightly different translation. If you look in the King James, it doesn't quite spell it out this way. The Spirit, He, meaning God, caused to dwell in us, longs jealously. But that's the gist of the passage here, the idea of God's longing for you. Do you get it? God longs for you. Jealousy is not a bad thing. If you're married to someone and your spouse is jealous, it can be good. Hey, I want you to do me a favor real quick. Would you just look at your neighbor and make sure their eyes are open? Nudge them a little bit. What we do at the school, they in back, if someone starts sleeping, they have to stand up and kind of, because it is warm in here, and I realize I'm not the most dynamic speaker. But I don't want you to miss this.
Because this is vital to what's going on here. And that is, God loves you immensely. And you hear that so often, it can just go over your head, yeah, God loves me, I know this. But stick with this. He loves you. He gives you this book. He wants you to know these things. He says, I've got a purpose for your life. You're going to love this. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to walk with you each day. Trust me. Live for me. And God chooses to wrap himself around you. Isn't that huge? Do you get this? The God of the universe knows you exist and cares immensely about you. Look at Zephaniah 3. The Lord thy God in the midst of thee is mighty. He will save, he will rejoice over who? Yes. He rejoices over you. And we could do gobs of verses. You know, there's another verse that says he's engraved your name on his hand. Now, I don't think God's got 3 billion names on his hand of all the elect of all the believers. But the idea is there that how can God forget about you? He not only knows you through and through, he cares deeply about you. You're his child. 2 Corinthians 6. I'll make my dwelling among them and walk among them. Is God in you? You walk with him. We all know the verse at the bottom of the page, so I'm not even going to read it because you hear it a lot. And I don't want to cheapen it. What I want to do is have you turn to the next page where we talk about what does it mean to glorify God? Help me out. When you hear that, we hear it so often, do you know what it means? What does it mean?
Make him look as big as he is.
Say again?
Make him look as big as he is.
Make God look as big as he is. What an awesome description. Think of times in the Bible. Think of Moses at the burning bush. It's hard. Maybe you can think of it when we had the fire. It would be awesome to have a bush here and all of a sudden have it catch on fire and things. And remember what God says to him, take off your shoes, right? So I'm sure Moses very quickly took off his shoes because that scared me to death. But I saw this bush and it was on fire and things and a voice spoke from the bush. I think that would get my attention. And the attitude that people have when they meet with God, you see where this is going? Changes them dramatically. And then God uses them. So he takes Moses. What happened to Moses after that? Do you remember what God had to do? I heard it. You don't whisper. You don't whisper. It's the writing.
He had to go back to Egypt and challenge face to face.
Okay, challenge. But what else did he do?
Took his shoes off.
Remember, he tended sheep as well. So maybe I'm getting the cart before the horse. But where I'm going with that is, you're going to have times in your life where glorifying God is just me and the sheep. And it seems like nothing's going on in your life. Trust me. It's like, really, is this all it's about? Am I really doing anything for God? It's okay. If you're where God wants you, trust me, you're doing his will. Jesus had, what, 12 disciples? One gave him away, and pretty much the other 11 kind of left. You can feel like sometimes, is anything right with what I've done here? Is God really glorified in this? Am I making him big? Because nothing big's going on. We could probably look at our VP denomination even and look at that and say, okay, we're trying, Lord, but we're not huge and we're not big. Is this really glorifying you? And the answer is an overwhelming yes, we're honoring him. So I want to encourage you. I've been blessed by being here, by seeing you, by hearing you sing, by seeing your love for God, for his word. It's just immense. You probably take it for granted, but I don't. Going on in your handout, we glorify God by loving and obeying him, by trusting and walking with him, by loving, obeying, trusting, and walking. Those are just a few examples. All I hear is better on making God big. That really says it all. Loving, obeying, trusting, walking. How do you flesh it out when I say something? Stop and ask, is that going to glorify God? Is it going to please God what I'm about to say? Use Jesus as your example. What a great idea. So if someone says, should I be... Well, I can think of so many examples. I'm trying to think of one that would apply. Should I tell lies, for instance, which sounds so contrived because it is, but I would say, well, did Jesus ever lie? No, can't think of any time. Well, that would be a good guide. I want to take this. It's not mine. Is that okay? Well, did Jesus ever steal? No. So as we think about how to glorify God, we use Jesus as our template and as our example. So if I do all these things, chaplain, my life's going to be good, right? My life's going to be happy. What do you think of that? Huh? Some of you are shaking your heads. No, why? I mean, this is me and God, right? And then we're good, and I'm doing what He wants, and He should be happy. Huh? We're going to suffer persecution. I don't want that. That's not in my bargain here. I glorify God. I want to make God big, but I want to be happy. We do, right? Anyone here not want to be happy? Raise your hand. I really want to see this. You see the problem. How does one lead to the other? I want an easy life. I don't want any problems. So God's trying to teach me to be patient. And I was picking my daughter up from Bible study one night. I had to get up early the next morning, so we're zippity-doo-dying home, and there is a car out in the dark in the street with its hood up that you can't see, ran right into it, and that plowed into another car, and she sued me. And it was a 2-year lawsuit that went on. You think God was teaching me patience? He was. He was teaching me a lesson. I didn't like it. It wasn't very pleasant. And the reason I'm telling you that is, next, a few years later, my wife had cancer. And so before deploying to Iraq, right before, I was able to be there for her surgery. Is she going to make it through? Is she all right? So while I'm over there, she has chemo. She decides she's going to sell a house while she's undergoing chemotherapy. And so I'm over there, I'm worried about her, this and that. Where I'm going with that is life is not easy. God does not promise an easy, happy life. But what He does promise is peace. And what's the theme of our camp?
Joy.
There's a difference. Never confuse happiness with joy. They're different. Trust me. Happiness is a piece of chocolate cake. Right? That was good tonight. I like that. And I appreciate that, Donna. She came right to our table and said, which one do you want? And I was thinking, wow, do I have to choose? Not teasing. But that made me happy. But joy is different. In deep-seated suffering, I know God is there for me, and He comes through. And my wife is doing all praise and thanks be to God. But imagine this bumper sticker, if you would, okay? Listen to this. Broke, unattractive, single. I'm dying, but I'm glorifying God. It's really not catchy, is it? Who wants a life like that? Someone will say, are you nuts? I don't want to do that. If you only serve God because He makes you rich, who's your God? If you only serve God because He makes you happy, this is nuts and bolts, very simple. I feel like I'm insulting your intelligence, but I just know in my own life it's a struggle every day. It's tempting to try and get a job either that pays more money or to do this or that that for the moment is going to make me happy. And I have to kind of do a course correct and say, wait, where is my, remember we talked about the rudder, where is the bridle, where are the reins, who's got the reins, do you or does God? Did Jesus make a ton of money? Jesus went to the cross. Did Jesus live a long life? He died in his 30s. You see where I'm going with this? They murdered Him. And we're told to follow Him wherever He wants us to go. So I don't want to leave you with a bad impression because, first of all, our God is not a meanie. He's not out to get you. He cares about you. So He's not out there thinking, how can I make your life miserable today? How can I zap you here? That's not what He's about. His plan for your life is good. God is not the problem. Who's the problem? We're the problem, children. So at the bottom of the page is a quote from C.S. Lewis. You're familiar with him, I guess. Someone read that quote, which is from the Living Lord. Who's going to read it? Thank you. You read once, didn't you? Yeah, let's get someone else. Brave volunteer. What's your thanks?
Our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We're half-hearted creatures fooling around with drink and sex and ambition. When infinite joy is offered us, like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum, because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the beach, we are far too easily pleased.
If anything that has been said tonight resonates with you as far as where you're at, I hope if you get the image of being in New York City playing by a fire hydrant in the summer, and someone comes along and says, I want to take you to the beach, and we're going to have a vacation there, the difference between you and your life settling for something that's just existing, rather than really living as God would have you to live. May God, and this is on page 37 of your handout, may God your deepest joy. Your deepest joy, your highest treasure, your greatest delight, you can fill in whatever else you want there. You get the idea. Pastor Jim, you were telling a story about a millionaire.
Yes, sir. There was a man in West Virginia that hit the lottery. He was already a millionaire. He had several businesses that he had had prosperously developed. But I believe it was $350 million that he won. Think of it, $350 million. He was already a millionaire. He didn't need any more money. But now he was rich beyond his wildest dreams. In the space of about 5 years, he had been arrested many times. His wife divorced him. His daughter was murdered because he gave her approximately $5,000 a week to do whatever she wanted. She had like three or four different cars, but she got involved with drugs. She got involved with the wrong people. She ended up dead. His wife ended up divorcing him. He ended up in jail. This man claimed to be a Christian. In fact, at first he had built three different churches with some of the money that he had had. The finality of it was, if I could give it all back, I would do it without hesitation.
Wow. And there'd probably be a lot of people that would be happier to see that. Yeah, $350 million. Wow. That is not our goal, dear friend. And I told you a couple things in my life, and the only reason I did that is to say I am very much at peace and experience joy. My wife's doing well, the lawsuit got settled and all that. Those are blips in the screen, if you will. Those are little bumps in the road, and they do come. And I guarantee you live long enough, they'll come in your life. But I guarantee you never will be sorry. You live for God, you serve God. I want you to, we'll fill in the rest of the page here, that true joy, I should say, the truest sense of happiness, but actually the true joy is found in glorifying God. And we're empowered by His Spirit to enjoy Him. He hasn't left us alone. So fill those in and turn to the last page, if you would. This is from Dr. Charles Hodge. Some of you may not be familiar with who he is, but many of you have heard his name, I'm sure. Dr. Charles Hodge, great church theologian. So I leave this with you, and hopefully tomorrow, maybe you're home thinking, okay, it's boring now, camp was great, now what do I do? We'll take this out and read it. It's got a good template for you in your life. Don't make your goal your own happiness, even your own family. And where he goes, and this was written over 100 years ago, but it's still proper and good today. He talks about, under part two, how to glorify God. What you're going to do, where you spend your time. And then part three is why we should make God's glory our aim in life. Look down at number seven, way at the bottom. God's glory brings your whole life into perfect harmony, inwardly and outwardly. It promotes